Right. Well, good morning again. This is Bob Brundage again. We're at the National Square Dance Convention in Orlando, Florida. This morning we're talking to two recipients of the Silver Spur Award and also the Silver Certificate from Roundelab. We're talking to Peg and Duck Terrell, currently of Lower Waterford, Vermont, previously from Jersey, I think, believe.
Correct.
That's right.
Okay. So why don't you tell us, let's start with you, Peg. Why don't we talk about how you got into square dancing, where you're born and brought up to start with, and we'll just take it from here. Go ahead.
Okay, well, my folks were all maniacs.
Maniacs.
And they moved down to New Jersey, and that's where my dad had his dental practice. And I was brought up down there, except the summers were all spent in Maine, and so I call myself a New Englander.
There you go.
And when it came time to retire, we decided we would go back to New England. But we'll start back at the beginning. My college days were in New Hampshire. I went to Colby Junior College at that time. Now it's Colby Sawyer College. And our president of the college happened to be from the tiny town that my folks all came from in Maine. So you know why I went there.
Okay.
And Doc went to
Dartmouth
in Hanover, New Hampshire.
Right.
But I never met him, even though the colleges were real close, until after I had graduated from Colby. Oh.
Well, we did meet once. We did meet once.
Where, dear?
We met at the Green Key Weekend. You came up and you were a date for Matt.
I was a date for his
roommate. Okay.
There were six of us, and eventually it turned around that I married my friend's date, and my friend married somebody else, and we're all happily still together.
Right.
Very much so.
Great.
We were married. Because the war came in, because that was in 41, 42, 43,
right.
I was at Colby.
Yeah.
Doc went into the service. He was Navy attached to the Marines.
That's right.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we carried our romance on through correspondence. And don't let anyone tell you, you can't do it that way.
Oh, that's right. Right.
So when he came back, we had a real date. And that was it.
What made it occur was the fact that my folks, who would, at that time, when we first started in college, lived in South Jersey. They moved to North Jersey near where Vega lived and her family.
Yeah.
So, not knowing anybody up there, I was interested in a contact. She was a contact.
Okay.
She's been the contact ever since.
So how did we get into dancing?
Well, I taught school. I taught first grade. And when Doc came home, I was still teaching. He had still his schooling to finish at Hanover. And when he graduated from there, he was accepted into dental school.
Okay.
And so we were engaged back in 47. But we decided, let him get 1 year of college through before we got married. So in June of 48, we were married. And as I always say, I supported him for the next 3 years by teaching, and then he got stuck with supporting me for the rest of my life.
Right.
I got the best of that bargain. But in our wedding party was what we had a gal I had grown up with and her husband. And unfortunately, that fall after we were married, he came down with polio and passed away very suddenly.
Yeah.
Leaving one child and a second child on the way.
Yeah.
And after Joan had her second child, she said to us, you know, I've got to get out. I just can't stay here in the house. I need to get out.
Right.
So her mom said, well, I'll take care of the children, and you and Doc and Peg can find something to do. So Joan said, I'm going to go over to the Y. They have square dance lessons over at the Y.
Okay.
And so she said, I'll go if you'll go, Peg and Doc. So...
Well, I can understand that she did not want to just go by herself.
Sure, right.
So we had to take two buses from the apartment that we lived in to get over there. She had to take a bus. And we always managed to meet at the Y, and we went in. We had a marvelous time. It was a series of 10 lessons, so to say.
They weren't lessons back then.
Just went in and we danced. We did the contras. We did
folk dances.
It was sort of a
very fundamental round
program
dances,
that you talk about nowadays.
Squares. It was just an all-round program.
Right. You remember who the caller was?
Walt Bullock.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
And Walt had been calling for quite a while. He was what you call a one-night stander, and his wife was there, and there was probably 20, 30 couples that came.
Yeah.
There were two single men that were there, and some of the single women, and Joan met her future husband there.
Okay.
And they got married the following year. And they don't dance at all, but
right.
We have gone on forever.
I guess so. Right.
We danced. I can remember they did the Black Hawk Waltz there.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
And that was so difficult.
That's right.
I know.
My goodness. And Little Eva Two-Step.
Barnes.
Yes.
Yeah.
We love to dance anyway. We never took lessons except for kids to do what you do as a kid.
Yeah.
But we loved to ballroom dance freestyle, and dancing was just in our blood. And it was great because Doc went to school all day. I taught school all day. And we needed this chance to be together
right.
and do something with people.
Right.
And it was wonderful.
Well, after I got out of school, and our oldest came along, we sort of dropped out for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And basically because we had to get ourselves organized. And by that time, Scott and Barbara had come along, and I was getting active in our dental society. Peg was starting to get active in the women's club.
Uh-huh.
And we came to the conclusion that we were passing each other on at the door every night.
Right.
And as to who was going to be babysitting, we immediately said, we need something together.
Now, may I interrupt you, Drew? We stayed in the apartment for 3 years. And then in 1951, we moved to Creskill in New Jersey and bought a little house there. And Doc used to take the bus into New York City where he was going to practice and where he eventually did practice. He and my dad went in together. But there was a fella on the bus who was a square dancer. And you know how you talk to people on buses. And was his name Sam Dan?
Yep.
And Sam mentioned that he used to, he danced once a month down at the school. And he said,
which is about a quarter of a mile away from our house.
An easy walk, just walk down.
Right.
And so he said, you know, you should come on down some third Friday night and dance with us. Well, it took us a while to get everything squared out, but one night we wandered down there on the third Friday night, and we were hooked. It was different than what we had learned back in the Y because square dancing had come along a little bit further now.
The Western influence.
The Western influence had come.
Yeah.
It was still walking out of, off the street.
Right.
What year are we talking about now?
We're talking about 55.
Okay.
I'd have to go back in the diaries.
It would have been about 55. Was right.
Well, that's close enough.
Okay.
Then.
Yeah.
And the caller of the club also was only about about halfway between where we lived and the school.
Uh-huh.
And they used to have, he used to have little workshops out in his basement. So,
It wasn't Marty Winterbine.
No, it was Marty, before Marty started out. It was Barbara and Sid Scott.
Okay.
Sid Scott and Barbara had seen square dancing when they went back home to Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And they decided to form a club. And when they came back to New Jersey, they started in the basement. And they called there, and we used to gather at their house and dance in the basement. It wasn't set up for any, it wasn't really a playroom or anything. It was pure basement.
Yeah.
And I can always remember Doc down there when Del Paso came in.
Uh-huh.
I had more trouble with Del Paso. I think it took me 3 months to realize what I was supposed to do with it.
Yeah, right.
Well, the poles kept getting in the
right
way, too.
But at least somebody would grab an arm and turn you one way, and somebody would grab another arm and turn you another way.
There was about two sets of it. And then Marty Winter lived in the same town.
Yeah.
And
he was just starting. He just decided to start that.
Yeah, he was a dancer, he and Flo. And then he decided that he wanted to be a caller. And so he'd go over to Sid and Barbara Scott's, and they'd let him try a little bit. And then that worked out well. Then he decided he wanted to do his own thing, too. So we had two callers in town.
There you go.
And they each needed a lot of practice.
Yeah.
And any time that we were free, we were all welcome to come on down to either house and dance with them all.
Right.
So that's what really got us started. And then that summer, when Marty Winter was really going to town, the Scots had gone back to Massachusetts to visit. And that was when Teacup Chain was the big rage. And Marty decided he was going to use that in a demonstration. And they needed one more couple. And there was nobody around but us. And so being the newcomers on the block, they weren't quite sure whether they should use us in a demonstration or an exhibition or not. But they decided it made the end of the second set.
Okay.
So they called us up and said, would you come on down and practice? And so we practiced Teacup Chain until it came out our ears.
Right.
On the Dents' lawn, they had rented a house on the Hudson River, and we used to dance out in the front of their lawn, and as boats went by, they'd wave to us.
No, their house was literally right on the river.
Okay.
And there was they had a little wall out in front of it, and on the other side of that wall was water.
Uh-huh.
But that's what got us started.
Okay.
We used to take our kids. We'd pack them into the car and take them up to the home of the dancers. Put them on their bed. Go down and dance, and the kids would go off to sleep.
Yeah. So, what is the evolution of the teaching?
Well, we danced for a while, for quite a while. And
the name of this club was at that time was Valley Promenaders. This is the northern valley of Burton County.
Right.
And
it was really even longer than that. The northern.
It was Creskill Folk and Dance Club.
Yes.
Originally.
Because we always did a regular tip, and then we had folk dances in
right.
between.
Mm-hmm.
We did the little either two-step.
Well, there were no round dances as we know them today at that time.
No. Right. Well, they were all eight measure routines.
Right. Yeah.
So we...
Which we loved.
Mm-hmm.
We loved the squares, we loved the round. And then our caller was the Scots called. And then he had to retire back to Massachusetts because the job was such that he had to go back.
Yeah.
And that left us Marty Winter had his own club, and he was going his way, but the Valley Promenaders just didn't want to die down.
Okay.
And we had another couple there, Jody and Joe Bromberg, They had danced before they met. They were in the club, very active.
And there was also one other couple, the Al and Alice Fulmer, who had been in the original
club
of the Creskill
folk
and dance.
Yeah, and so we got down to three couples, and Jody looked at the three of us, and she said, "We are not going to die. We have a lot of people who want to enjoy this recreation." And so she looked at Al Fulmer and said, "You are going to be the caller, and you are going to learn two singing calls every month, and you're going to call them." And she pointed to herself and said, "I am going to teach a class, and I'm going to get everybody on our block, and we're going to learn to square dance this summer." And she pointed at Doc and said, "Doc, you are going to be the round dance leader."
Okay.
And I said, "But we have no room in our house." She
right.
said, "You're going to use our basement, and you're going to teach rounds in our basement."
Yeah.
Period. And so that's what happened.
It did. That club, who started, was down to us three couples.
Right.
At one time, had a dance with 22 squares.
Okay.
In a hall that actually would maximally hold 15.
All right.
Well, that's the first time I've heard of a round dance teacher by appointment.
Well, Jody was an excellent teacher.
Well, she taught squares. She also taught the folk dances because she liked folk dance.
Uh-huh.
So we had a folk dance part in our club. She taught the square dancing, but she did something interesting with her classes. She got everything she could find from the SIO, from the callers that she knew. She had also Good Morning America, Henry Ford's book. She had everything imaginable, and she just pulled and picked and pulled. And she said to the class, she was a dictator, "You're going to run it this way. You will come here for lessons, we'll say for 2 hours, but then you're going to stay another half an hour. And every week, someone else is going to bring something to munch on. We don't care whether it's cheese and crackers or cake or whatever, but you're all going to stay for a half an hour afterwards. That's part of the class to
sit down,
to get
socialize.
To know each other."
Yeah, that's great.
And in fact, actually, she... within a couple of weeks of starting the class, she would choose a head of the class.
Okay.
And it was any time that she wanted to get in contact with the class, she called the head of the class.
Yeah.
And it was their job to get the rest the information out to the rest of the class.
Right.
So she wouldn't have to. She was a teacher.
Yeah.
But the main thing was they didn't have to eat, they didn't have to drink, but they had to stay around enough just to socialize.
Right. Well, that's great.
And when a club came out of their class, that club was welded together into a solid group of people.
Well, I want to get the transit because I know you folks are a little pressed for time. Not that we still have extra time, but... I do want to talk about legacy, as I know you've been a prime mover in legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, tell us, for the sake of the tape recording, what legacy is all about to start with, and then how you got involved.
Okay. Well, it sort of has a background because you have to be in a role of some sort of leadership to become a trustee of legacy. We are people who get involved. Being in the northern part of New Jersey at that time, there was a square dance organization down in the central part of the state.
Well, it encompassed our whole area, but the prime location of the leadership was in the middle of the state.
Right.
And so we would get down to their meetings to represent our area and the club. They got to know us, and so they decided this was in the 60s, that they needed a president. They'd take one from the South, and then the next year one from the North, and then go back to the South. So it would alternate, so nobody would feel out of place.
Yeah.
And so they couldn't find anybody else up North. So they said, well, Peg and Doc, you've been helping to contribute to the brand new Grand Square that had just come out. You seem to know the clubs.
Right.
And so why don't you be the presidents for 1 year, and then next year it will come down South. And here's your vice. You'll have two vice presidents. And
they're moving from one vice president to two vice presidents.
So one vice president was in charge of classes, the other vice president was sort of the administration. And it
it became that way. They didn't have any particular duties when we got them, but we gave the duties.
Okay. We assigned them duties.
Right.
We no sooner took office when the editor of Grand Square said, my Boy Scout responsibilities are so large, I'll be editor for one more year while you are the presidents of the Northern New Jersey Square Dancers Association. We said, well, we really shouldn't be presidents of the Northern New Jersey Square Dancers Association because we're land dance leaders now. We started in 1960 when Jody pointed a finger at us.
Yeah.
And they said, you don't make any money because no one pays you for coming to Q rounds. So you are not making money, therefore you may be the president.
Okay.
So that's how we got to be presidents in the Square Dancers organization, which allows nobody who makes any money from the activity to be an officer.
When
we couldn't find a replacement for the editor, so we talked our first vice president into becoming the president so we would be the editor. And for 25 years we edited the magazine.
Right.
And knowing the value of publicity, we sent it out all over. Well, you get known when you're the editors because of this, and so therefore, the first meeting of Legacy, we heard about it, but we were not among the invitees to the first year.
It was still very local.
It was local,
right.
But in 1975, Legacy 2 out in Cleveland, we received an invitation to come.
Okay.
And we, in fact, we used our car. We drove out with John and Freddie
Kaltenkoller
to Cleveland. And it was a thrill.
Right.
There was Bob Osgood, Stan Burdick, all these people there.
Charlie Baldwin, probably.
Charlie Baldwin was there. Dorothy Shaw was there, what a pleasure to talk with her.
Right.
She had more words that could be quoted than I could remember. Our pencils were flying. It was just a thrill. It was like if you went out to meet the President of the United States, you couldn't have been any more thrilled than we were to be there among all these names. And what did Stan and Kathy Burdick do to us? They made little old us a moderator for this panel of editors. And here we are, a small magazine, 24 pages, and here's Bob Osgood, Stan Burdick, Charlie Baldwin, and we're moderating this group. Wow. it was a thrill.
I'm sure.
And Legacy is a resource, leadership, communications center.
Right.
It is like, we call it the umbrella for the activity. It encompasses all the facets.
Right.
The callers, the cueers, the prompters, the special interest groups, the publishers, the record producers.
Right.
Any facet of
clothing,
the suppliers. That year in 75, at the closing meeting, I don't remember whether it was the corral or there was this, someone from the suppliers stood up and said, Legacy has given us the impetus to form the National Association, there with the Square and Round Dance Suppliers organization. It came in 75 because they had met at Legacy and decided we need an organization.
Right.
And I believe it was the corral in South Jersey that the Pedersons were owned and ran, and I believe they were one of the instigators, because I believe it was he who made the announcement. And all we rounding crew is there. We looked at each other and said, boy, did we blow it. Because here, we're meeting, we've been talking together and saying there's caller lab, why, and we need a round dance organization. Why didn't we do that?
Yeah.
So we mentioned it to Kathy and Stan, who were the secretaries at the time. We mentioned it to Bob Osgood, who was very active at that time there. And 2 years later, in 1977, every buzz session had a breakout dedicated to the round dance leaders there.
Yeah.
This was in Memphis.
This was in Memphis, Tennessee. Wayne Wiley and Norma were there. Bud and Shirley Parrott were there. Clancy and Betty Miller were there, even though it's spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R. We pronounced it Miller as
right,
they did. We were there. There were about 30, 32 ground dance people who came to that first little buzz session.
Not all were teachers.
Okay.
There was Dave Johnstone from Canada, who was just a dancer, but he was a leader up there, and he was invited to Legacy that year, and he came and put his input into it.
Yeah.
Ken and Carol Geyer were there. I was thinking of the ones who got involved in some
right.
of the work. Hopkins. Jim
yeah.
Hopkins
Jim
and Marie.
Hopkins
from Canada were down. And we all met, and in that first buzz session, we agreed there is a need for an international round dance leaders organization.
Right.
The second meeting, they decided, this was the one that Diva Bud and Shirley Parrott, I've got all these notes home, because I was a secretary at that time, and I was told to take all the notes. But by the second meeting, they had said, is this feasible? Can we do it? If we can, Wayne Wiley, how about you?
He was probably the, among the whole group, he was probably the
most recognized.
Nice, okay.
Would he please lead the effort? And he said, I'll lead the effort, but I will not be the chairman because the first meeting of whatever this organization is called will have to choose the chairman, but I will be glad to lead the effort.
Okay.
And so from then on, every buzz session went on from there, laying the groundwork for the formation of what is now called
Charlie Capon. And Edith offered to find a place.
Okay.
And since we were in Memphis, they were in Memphis, we decided let's have it in Memphis because Charlie, you could fly in so easily.
Yeah.
Charlie set it up. Wayne.
Same hotel, wherever you'd have.
No. Because we were in the Omni there.
Yeah, I know, but they changed the name of the hotel, but it's the
same. No, where Rounder Lab itself met was a different spot.
Oh, okay.
It was close to the
right.
airport, remember?
You're right. Excuse me.
Right.
We're just about to run out of this side of the tape, so let me take a second to turn this over.
Okay.